Welcome to the first in Paul Council's Prosperity Catalyst Momentum Series. There are 11 sessions in this series, and this one is titled The Red Carpet to Economic and Personal Freedom.
Hey, welcome to the first mentoring or momentum program for the year. For the guests, the Momentum program is a series of 11. Basically, they're steps or actions or stages, probably more accurately. But you can also describe them as tasks that you need to do. You can accurately describe them as pieces of the jigsaw puzzle. So the jigsaw puzzle consists of a pathway to economic and personal freedom. And when you hear me talk, you'll mostly hear me connect those two ideas together. Economic freedom and personal freedom. When you think about it, there's lots and lots and lots of people who have lots and lots and lots of money. But they're actually not free. And then you can think about, well, there are some people who are actually quite free, but they live a lifestyle which is currently unsustainable. At some stage, they have to go and do something for money. So you think about, people who are really passionate about surfing. They sort of work their way up and down the coast, and they can do that for, I don't know, X amount of years until it gets to a point where it just becomes unsustainable and they've got to go and do something about their economic resources. So what happens if you actually connect the two, where you can be economically free on a sustainable basis? And with that economic freedom comes personal freedom. And so what would that look like? If you have a think, what would that actually look like? What would it mean for you to be economically and personally free? Now, when you think about economic freedom, most people will kind of sort of think in terms of millions of dollars. Okay? It doesn't actually cost that much. It doesn't even cost a fraction of that much. In fact, it would probably surprise you how little it actually does cost you. The biggest challenge is to get rid of the blueprints that are currently driving our behaviour and currently drive our results. So get rid of all of those preconditions and those, pre-thought out ideas. And so this journey over 11 stages, it's one little piece of the jigsaw puzzle. And so if you pick up the central themes, and for those people who are guests, if you haven't got notes, just email Barry and he'll send you the notes. For those people that have got a set of notes, as you go, just jot down an idea or two that strikes you or strikes you as being relevant, and that will probably be the central theme of the evening. And so when you start to add those together, by the time you get to the 11th step, you'll actually have the picture in front of you. Just like you would have, if you go and buy a jigsaw puzzle, you have the picture. And then you have all the pieces in the box. And the idea is that you tip them upside down, you scatter them, and then you try and put them back together again. So this picture doesn't complete until the 11th step, because you'll always be missing pieces. But when you've got the picture, now it's time for you to go to work and start sticking together in the way that facilitates your journey. But you can do some work beforehand. For next week, we're talking, and actual fact, next month, you get some specific homework to do. And you've got to do those things, because if you don't do them, if you just leave them sitting there as ideas, of course you won't take action on them. And anything you don't take action on, you'll actually fail to achieve. So think about, does that make sense for people? It's not necessary that you actually start this process at step one. You can actually start anywhere you like. You can start at step six if you like, just as long as you get all 11 bits. Okay, so it doesn't matter which way or in what order the bits come, just as long as you get them all. And then you can shuffle them up and put them any way you like. But we're kind of sort of trained to think linearly and think sequentially. So this is the way that I've kind of sort of unfolded it. So today, pretty interesting times that we live in, isn't it? Pretty interesting challenges that we're facing. And if you think about it, you know, stuff is moving so fast that we'll experience more in a year or two than our actual grandparents would have experienced in their whole life. We'll experience more change this year. That's pretty amazing. You know, the world's body of knowledge is actually doubling every 2 years. So, if you think about starting a degree, and it's a 4-year degree, by the time you finish it, 2 of those years are redundant. I mean, you think about, if you get technology, you know, those people who really get the technology quick, and by the time the sort of laggards like I come along and get that new technology, it's 10 years out of date. But in actual fact, it's been projected that by the year 2010, the world's body of knowledge will double every 72 hours. Now, I really want you to think about that. I really want you to think about that. Because what does it mean? It means that the information that... Okay, so let me ask this question. The information that you currently use to make the major decisions, or even the minor decisions on a daily basis, where did you get that information from? How long ago did you get it? And so track back how many years ago that you got it, and then do a multiplier if that's how many times it's been made redundant. Because if it wasn't true, but if we go back 10 or 20 years, and if the world's body of knowledge was doubling every 2 years, that means it's 10 times redundant. Does that make sense? And yet you're still, your life is still being informed on that information. Now, all you've got to do to work out in relationship to the notion of economic and personal freedom, and you can actually put anywhere that you like. Okay, so I'm just choosing to use economic and personal freedom. But in relation to that or in context with that, what are your results? How free are you economically and how free are you given uncompromised choice or uncompromised time? So the first time in our lives, we've actually got this term, time starvation. What does that mean? Does anybody get a sense that time is moving really, really, really quickly and more rapidly than they've ever experienced it before? So how can it? Like, I mean, it's a minute, isn't it? An hour's an hour, isn't it? So how can you get that sense?
That one year is 100% of the time you've already lived. At age 50, it's 1/50th of the time you've actually lived. At age 80, it's 1/80th. So it becomes smaller and smaller as a percentage.
Yeah? Anybody else? Yeah. Exactly. Anywhere else?
I think that also relates to the definition of economic freedom and personal freedom. The less personal freedom we have, the more it appears that we seem to be running out of time. Whereas all we're doing is we're getting our delusions into living somebody else's dream or whatever, however you want to look at it.
Okay. That's an interesting one. Say that one again. The less personal freedom we seem to have, the more, what did you say?
The more time starvation.
The more time, because...
time starvation, you sort of buy into that...
Because you're trying to buy into somebody else's picture.
Yeah,
somebody else's demands.
Yeah.
In fact, if you go back to, go back a few centuries, there wasn't actually, time wasn't known in the same way that we understand it now. So time was based on the rhythms of the season. Time was based on sun up and sun down and four seasons. It wasn't linear, segmented, fractured in the way that we understand it. Now, somewhere along the line, they invented this thing called time, and they invented a way to measure it, so that we could all march to the sound of the same drum, or the beat of the same drum. And that's the way that they brought in the Industrial Revolution. Now, the more we chase the rabbit down that knowledge hole, or the more we chase time, or the more we chase activity, the more disconnected we actually become from the dynamics and the rhythms and the flow of nature's time. And it's my belief that it's the disconnect that has people feeling rushed. So the more we go down that linear, the more disconnect, and it's that we actually feel. And so we take on more demands because society is driving us over there, whereas in fact, the people who have freedom, they move over to that sort of harmony and that balance and that rhythm and that flow. So think about that. Those people are scrambling so fast to become so emotionally numb that they've blocked out the nagging thoughts that they have of the loneliness that actually goes with the disconnect, or the nagging thoughts that they have of the unrewarding lives. I mean, you think about it, if you're in a position at work and you want to know where you'll be in 5 or 10 years' time, just pick somebody that's 5 or 10 years older than you and look at their results. And then ask yourself, is that where you want to be? Now, most people don't do that. They see them, they walk with them, they share time with them, they share space with them, but they never actually see them. You're 50, I'm 40. If I don't change the way that I'm being, then what you are doing is just modeling where I will be in 10 years' time. And so the way that we don't see that is to actually numb ourselves out. And, of course, busyness is a way of numbing out. And so what society wants to do is have us speed up. Mr. Jackson passed away today. He died of complications from doing a lifetime of crap that he didn't actually want to do. His condition was further complicated because he also failed to do much, if any, of what he did want to do. Expert reports said that he died from cramming somebody else's idea of life into his body, into his brain, and into his life. Attempts by Mr. Jackson to fill the void with work, cars, excessive eating, alcohol, 3 wives, 2,000 rounds of golf, and meeting everybody else's expectations but his own were dismally unsuccessful. Unfortunately, all this took so much out of Mr. Jackson that he was just worn flat out and died about 20 years too soon. Miserable in his last, he passed away unpeacefully yesterday at his home. He was surrounded by colleagues from the job he hated and family members who are all just as miserable as he was. Does that ring a bell for anybody? Anybody resemble that? Think about possibilities. Is it possible to have a more enlightening life than the one that's actually been mapped out for us via the wisdom of convention? Is that a possibility? Is it a possibility? Is it a possibility for you? Bit of uncertainty there? If it's a possibility for you, what would have to happen in order for you to realise that possibility? Have to do all the homework and all the 11 steps. Now, who's been doing 11 steps programs for the last 24 years? Or 12, if you like, had a few, take a few. And it's not working out. So if that's possible for you, what actually has to take place in order for you to gain access to that possibility? So think about that question. And I really want you to take these questions home and contemplate them. Don't leave them sitting there in the seminar because they'll just be empty words, really. And I want you to sort of, get that thinking bubble out and really start to examine it, pull it apart, stretch it, tease it. Is it possible that you have more potential than you're actually currently tapping into? Who thinks that's a possibility? If you have more potential than you're currently tapping into, what's preventing you from tapping into it? old ideas. That could be one, and ideas that you got from, you know, your training, your formative years. And you know, for me, that was a few years ago now. But we've got to start thinking about that. How do you access your full potential? Because we're born with 100% potential, ain't we? We can be anything, we can do anything, we can be, if anybody's not done it, we can be the first. If anybody's done it, we can be, do it better, faster, stronger, longer, anything. We all have that potential. Now, fast forward, let's say to the age 80, and I'm not saying that 80 is the checkout age, all right? But it's certainly in the departure lounge somewhere. Somewhere we're in the departure lounge, you know. Might stretch it out a few years, but... Now, think of all those people who are sitting in the departure lounge. Think of yourself sitting in your departure lounge. Now look back at your 80 years. How much of your potential have you achieved? How much of the 100% potential that you were born with have you actually achieved? What would be your guess? Sorry? Very small? Would it be single-digit percentages or double-digit percentages? More than 50%? Less than 50%? What do you reckon? Anybody? Single-digit? For most people, it's a single-digit. So what happened to all that potential? It's still there, isn't it? You still have it, don't you? I mean, think about this. If you're still upright and breathing, you still have access to 100% of that potential. You don't lose it until you actually check out. But what's going to make you realize it over and above what you're realizing now? What's going to carry you forward? Is it possible that you have somehow blocked this potential and are somehow selling yourself short? Is that a possibility? If that's a possibility, why would you have done that to yourself? Sorry? Fear? Fear of what? Fear of not being a success, so you'd rather do nothing and be unsuccessful. That's what that says, doesn't it? So is it really fear of being success?
Well, I
mean, you don't have to speak for you. You can speak for other people.
So you have once and then you just, you know, you have different steps in your life and as you get older, yeah.
Anybody else? Fear of leaving the comfort zone, which is really what?
Yeah, no.
So, I mean, it's really interesting that fear of leaving the comfort zone, because I think that's a fair call. I think people, you know, do build these cocoons around them, and I think it is rather... you know, there's a lot of anxiety when they get to the edge of that comfort zone because what's past that is the unfamiliar, isn't it? And what we do is we fear the unfamiliar. Why do we fear the unfamiliar? That's an excellent point. We don't really know what's going to happen. So if you think about that in another way, is that we lose our predictability. So anything where we can reasonably predict the outcomes, we don't tend to fear it as much. Now, is it true that that people can lose their life driving a car? But all of us drive. Why? Sorry, we go on statistics? We don't go on statistics, huh?
We have a reasonable belief that we are not going to.
We've got a reasonable belief that we're not going to. How do we get that reasonable belief? How do we get the confidence?
Practice.
That's it, practice. So how do we regain predictability so that we don't fear the unfamiliar? We've actually got to get out there and practice. But we don't want to because we fear. So there's no way. So if you fear and you're in that comfort zone is ever diminishing. It's not expanding. Because to expand your comfort zone, you've got to do what? You've got to step outside of it. You've got to get into the unknown. If you're not operating in the unknown, what are you doing? Standing still, stagnating. How are you operating? Sorry, who said that? Yeah, so you're operating off familiar territory. You're operating from familiar experiences. Now, familiar experiences will not allow you to grow. They'll only ever allow you to get the familiar. So to grow, you've got to go past that. And so, again, this is one of the outcomes of the momentum series of presentations, to start people thinking about, okay, but how far out do I need to travel? Just one step. Just so, it's like that story of the little girl. Just crawl down, crab down if you have to, because as soon as you start your crabbing, that's unfamiliar territory, isn't it? But there's some sense of predictability that I can hold on to. But I'm now already past my comfort zone. Okay, and she got down so far. She stopped, I guess, had a think, a few things. But the more that you stay there, the more that little piece of unfamiliarity becomes familiar, because it's solid, you can stand there, you got your balance, maybe you got your breath back. And so you don't have to move if you don't want to. But then she took the next leap because she had somebody there that was supporting her. So it's a good idea for you to get somebody in your life that will support that. So what if you and I could be the producers of our own movie? What if you or we could write the script? What if we could get together and write a script for the movie, and that movie is called The Rest of Your Life? Would that be a good idea? What happens if we could actually play the starring role, and let's call this movie Economic and Personal Freedom? This is The Rest of Your Life. Instead of playing the incarcerated role that society has encouraged us to play, because if you're incarcerated, either by your fears or by your loyalties to your subconscious mind or by your loyalties to conventional wisdom, how do you move beyond that? Can you be somewhere between freedom and incarceration? I don't know the answer to this. Let's say freedom is here. And you can, again, use your own words. I just use incarceration. Can we be somewhere between?
You have to go along the journey to get to the other.
I don't know.
It's a possibility you're not going to just jump from one to the other.
So is there a kind of a sort of a switchover point? I don't know. But let me ask you this question. If I just change that to pregnancy, and this is not pregnant, is there some halfway mark? I don't know. Do you grow towards it? If I said, this is honest, and this is dishonest, is there some halfway mark? If this is integrity, and this is lack of integrity, is there some halfway mark? Do you grow towards integrity? If this is responsible, and this is irresponsible, is there some, I don't know.
Like children could grow from being irresponsible and you teach them to become responsible.
Yeah, that's a fair call. But think about it for yourself. Think about it. So what happens if we can actually move. We can be the starring role. We can actually write the movie. We can script it. We can actually play it. In order to do that, what have we got to do? Stop playing the role that society has conditioned us in. So we're going to change our mind a few things. What if we could exit the movie that society has designed for us so that we could walk the red carpet? Wouldn't it be magic just walking up that red carpet? And at the end of that red carpet is a lifestyle that we've actually purposely designed for ourselves. Now, that's possible. How do we know it's possible? Because people have done it before you. So they've set an example. So whatever they've done, it included some how-to stuff. But mostly, it actually involved getting access to a different way of thinking and a different way of looking. What if you and I could be more proactively and consciously create our outcomes rather than just receiving the outcomes that are actually showing up? So most people are passive recipients of what's happening. And you can hear it in their language, you can hear it in their excuses, you can hear it in their beliefs, you can see it in their actions, you can see it in their bodies. You can see it in their eyes. You know, go to any busy, whether it's traffic in the morning and you're standing on a bridge and you're just watching the cars and trucks, or whether you're at a train station and you're seeing people, or whether you're in the city and there's just hordes of people going one way and hordes of people going the other way. Just, you can see it there. The secret the society will never tell you is that regardless of where you came from and regardless of what your current experiences have been, you have a most unique potential. And society will never tell you that. Why will it never tell you that? Pardon? Doesn't fit its purposes, why not? Exactly, you know. They have a different purpose for you. And that's the one that we're actually conditioned into. Now, unless you regain an awareness and start reclaiming that potential, what you're doing is living their purpose. You know, I often say you can be the hero of your own story or the victim of somebody else's story. They're the two choices. And how do you tell what role you've been playing to date? What would be a good way of knowing? The results. Now, it's a bit difficult when you start looking at results, isn't it? Because most people don't want to see them. Now, some results are really easy to look at. You know, you just get on a set of scales and you just look at the numbers. They're really easy, okay? And we look at the numbers and then we make up all sorts of stories about why those numbers are wrong. That's fair, isn't it? You know? Labor wasn't very good when they put that together. The batteries must be something wrong. Maybe the spring's broken and it's stuck on that 18 number. I don't know. Other results are less tangible, aren't they? So we tend to live in that someday isle. You know, little sort of desert island there, something, you know, someday isle. I'll be somewhere. Someday I'll get my stuff together. Someday it's going to happen. Someday I'll be sitting on that hammock. I don't know. Just like an uncut diamond has all the potential to sparkle, you have all the potential to walk the red carpet and unleash that potential into a beautiful and purposeful and conscious life of awareness. You have that potential. How is that potential in you going to be uncorked? Because while the cork's on the bottle, it has all the potential to be a very, very lovely wine. But that's all it ever has. Unless we actually uncork it. Then it's got the potential to be a headache. It's got the potential to be joy. It's got the potential to be a whole lot of things. But we've got to uncork it, don't we? So, think about that. This is exactly what the Momentum program is actually all about. The 11 steps you'll receive over time are designed to help you begin to realize or to begin to take steps in the direction of realizing. Is it going to be instant? Are you, do you suddenly hit a critical mass and, hey, presto, you've, you know, grown some bunny ears and whatever? No. But that's what society would like us to believe. Has anybody ever been to a wealth creation course of any description whatsoever? Anybody? Okay. When you tell your mates that you've just been to a wealth creation course of any description whatsoever, what's one of the first questions they ask you? How much money have you made? You know, so I went and sat in a seminar, I walk out and then money starts raining. Is that the way it's supposed to be? Because it's illogical. But that's the question that they ask you, isn't it? But they don't ask the same person. They don't ask the same question of a brain surgeon. You know, I attended a lecture on brain surgery the other day and said, okay, so how many brains have you removed or whatever? They don't ask the same question of a plumber or a carpenter. I had a flying lesson the other day. Okay, so how many jets do you fly? They don't ask that. I had a golf lesson the other day. Yeah, how many holes of money have you got? But it's illogical. But they ask it, don't they? Because you've probably experienced something else. So it's a process that unfolds over time. And the process has to be well thought out, because what you've got to do is two things almost simultaneously. And it's not, the principles are actually quite easy, but the practice is actually quite difficult. One of the first things you've got to do is start dropping your loyalty, your connection to the subconscious images that are actually driving all of your behaviors, attitudes, beliefs. Now, because there's a whole bunch of stuff that's driving it. Now, that's not easy to do, just drop it and then go and reach onto a new bunch of stuff. So what has to happen over time is the gradual dissipation of those whilst we're gradually building the new ones. Now, the more effort that we put in, the more practice, the more repetition that we use, the faster we connect to new. But if we're only doing like this once a month and we're going back to 30 days of not this, which do you think has the greatest pull? Well, the greatest pull, sorry?
The 30 days of not doing it.
Yeah, they have the greatest pull. So you've got to give yourself some slack, you know. Don't beat yourself up because the change is not going to be instant. You've just got to give yourself permission to make that gradual, sequential, logical. And if you keep focused on it, someday you will actually hit critical mass and you will look around and say, hey, look, I'm more freer today than I was 2 years ago. I'm more able to do the things that I want to do now than I was a period of time ago. So make no mistake, far too many people make a conscious or unconscious choice to live in the pain of the discomfort of the pain and discomfort of their past. Why is it that we can always seem to remember pain or unhappiness? Why is it we're so hooked into, because when you think about it, they're just memories, aren't they? But those memories are somehow stuck in our bodies, and every time we sort of hit that hot button, you know, we light up like a Christmas tree and we experience the same things that we experienced 10, 5, 15, 20 years ago. Why is it that we're so hooked on that? Yeah. Well, yeah, there are certain, you know, sub-personalities within us. It's the only way they can feel. And they don't care how they feel, just as long as they feel. You know, you have a feeling sub-personality. It doesn't care whether it's pain or pleasure, because it's all the same to them. It's just energy. So it can light up as quickly in terms of the feeling sense over a Barney than it can over, you know, a rose and some chocolates. It doesn't care where it gets its feeling from. It just wants to feel. So they become so trapped by conditioning memories of past experiences that they're unable to see the forest through the trees. That's what one of those subpersonalities do to you. And for the Money Mastery people, we'll actually be going further into that next weekend. They tend to live a grey existence, not really knowing whether they're moving forwards or backwards or sideways or up or down or whatever. It's kind of sort of like, for years I've been searching for a word, searching for a word that sort of, I don't know. You know, when I was a child, I think those, we used to have a lot of zombie movies being made. I can remember lots of movies about zombies when I was a tyker. And they were kind of sort of the Walking Dead, weren't they? But I don't mean zombies. We don't mean cyborgs. I don't mean that people are unconscious because, you know, they're conscious. And I don't mean hypnotized, but in fact they are hypnotized. It's just that we're not hypnotized in the way that a stage hypnotist might hypnotize. We're just kind of sort of wandering through life, not really being fully engaged, not really being fully aware. And we're not fully alive. And one year just looks like the next and just looks like the next and just looks like the next. And we have these little projects. And the projects that we have are called bills. Every project seems to resolve around a bill. You've got to knock that one off, knock that one off, knock that one off, knock that off, knock that one off, knock that one off. And 50 years later, bills still around. Like these projects called bills. So they move through the motions, but they have no real understanding of where they're heading. And suddenly they get to the departure lounge and they look back. Is this what life's all about? Have I consciously designed it? Have I been the director and the scriptwriter of my movie? Or have I just now realized that I've just lived society's movie? Imagination and memory, they're nearly the same. Memory is reaching back into the past and dragging something into the present. Imagination is reaching into the future and dragging something back to the present. Which one do you think will actually get you to start realizing or to start uncorking your potential? Memory or imagination? Now, Einstein says, he said a lot of things really quickly. Einstein says that imagination is actually more important than anything. It's more important than knowledge itself. Because without imagination, we can't do the design work. We can't do the creative work. We can't do the script writing. And if we can't do that, then what we're working on is memory. And memory will always hold us in that zone of comfort. Memory will always hold us in captive of our fears. And we've got to move beyond that. Most people have a vague feeling that they want to be wealthy, but they don't actually have a burning ambition. They've got a vague feeling that they like to be economically and personally free, but it's actually not central. Because they're focused on something else. They're focused on the daily, whatever the daily is. You know, some people call it the daily grind, some people call it the rat race, some people call it the treadmill, whatever it is. That's where their focus is. And what do you get? Well, you get exactly what you focus on. So the desire for economic freedom just isn't strong enough. As a result, they do the same things over and over again, and they live a repetitive life. So they're repeaters. While they dislike the life they lead, they're actually stuck in the repetitiveness of their familiar territory. You know, Mark Twain says, look, it ain't what you know that gets you into trouble. It's what you know for sure that isn't true or that isn't so. What did he mean by that? Anybody?
In paper, he quite a hell of a lot.
Sorry? Yeah, in a nutshell. So what you know is what's familiar to you. And what's familiar to you is your truth, isn't it? It's your personal truth. Now, again, the only way we have of knowing where our personal truth is leading us is to look at what? Results. Because the mind will do all sorts of funny things. The mind will want to justify it, the mind will want to defend it, the mind will want to do all sorts of things to it. And there's nobody attacking it, certainly not me. But just understand what your mind will want to do. It's your personal truth. Now, your mind will not deviate one iota from what you hold as a personal truth. Because why would it? It's your truth. It will not deviate one iota. So, your personal truths, you may not be consciously aware of all your personal truths, but your personal truths dictate the results that you're getting in any area of your life. So what do we need to do to change those results? Yeah, change the personal truths that are responsible for them. Because the subconscious mind will only allow you to follow your personal truths. Doesn't make them wrong. It makes them perfect for getting the results that you want. If you're happy with that, stick with them. If you're not happy with that, then we've got to change the blueprint that's obviously responsible for them. That's what he says. It ain't what you know or what you don't know that gets you into trouble. It's what you know for sure that just ain't so. So in other words, it's the personal truths that are in fact inaccurate in the context of wanting freedom. They're very accurate in the content or the context of becoming busier and becoming more fearful and becoming more incarcerated. In terms of economic freedom, what society has taught us is a linear process. You know, if you think about what we've been taught to do over and over and over and over and over again, we've been conditioned, we've been taught it at school. You know, school really prepares us for the job market. And what does the job market prepare us for? Consumerism. And we follow that circle or that cycle. So we work for a year. By the end of the year, you have earned the wages that you have earned. Whether you're on wages or whether you're in a small business, you will have earned the money that you've earned. Now, at the end of that year, let's call it a tax year, the tax man will say that you have earned this much, and let's not worry about deductions or anything like that, and so you owe us this much in tax. Okay? Now, at the end of that year, how much, let's say that you're on $100,000, how much of the $100,000 do you actually have left over? It'll be minus number, because most people have a credit, they have interest, they have mortgages or whatever. So, generally speaking, it'll be a minus number. Now, is it, when you think about it in those terms, is it logical for you to work all year just to get to a position of less than zero? You know, I was hearing a story on about Donald Trump. Now, Donald Trump, very, very smart cookie. In the 80s, he made mega gazillions in real estate. Especially luxury hotels, and of course 87 and then the recession, he lost it all. And he told the story once that he was walking along and he saw a homeless person. And he was talking to his colleague and he turned to the colleague and he said, "Do you know that that guy is $187 million richer than me?" And the colleague said, "Well, how come? That guy's got zero. And that's exactly it. I'm in debt to $187 million. So, think about that. He since turned that around because what he wasn't doing was following what we call... Where have I gone? What he wasn't doing was following that linear process. So we work for a year, at the end of the year we've got zero. So what do? We go back and start another year. We start that year at zero. We earn as we go. We get to the end of that year, we've got less than zero. So what do? We go back to the start of another year with less than zero. We work for the year, we earn whatever, and we get to that, the end of that year with less than zero. So what do? Well, it just makes sense, doesn't it? We go back to a new year. Doesn't that make sense? Anybody? It makes sense, does it? Okay. Who's really happy with that process? Scary. Some people are actually nodding. It makes sense. See? That's what I call linear income. It's linear. And we've all been conditioned to do it. It doesn't matter whether you earn $50,000 a year, $35,000 a year, $100,000 a year, $200,000 a year. If it's linear, the same process. You know, your lifestyle will cost you about 12% more than you earn. Doesn't matter how much you earn. So linear income is the level equivalent of a flat world paradigm, and is repeated generation after generation for 96% of the population. 1% of any given population at any given time in history will obtain what they call economic or financial freedom. 1%. So in Australia, I believe that's 200,000 people. Is that right? So if you want to be in that 1 in 200,000 people, what are you going to have to do? In any given rate, any given generation, any given time, 5% of the population obtain what they call financial independence. Something less than financial freedom, I guess. Maybe they're self-sufficient, but they can't be extravagant. Financial independence.
Okay, is that day to day, if everything were to just keep going as it was, they would be fine. But if there was any sort of, hospital have an accident, cut or whatever, then.
So if crunch came to crunch, they wouldn't be so independent. Yeah. Okay, excellent.
It's happening to a lot of people now because interest rates have dropped, they're not getting the return, so a lot of them are actually having to.
In fact, it's history repeating itself, because remember the high interest rates of the early 90s? 80s and early 90s? And so the pensioners, you know, setting up their lives for those returns of 12-14%, and then it's gone south ever since. So now there's this whole new generation, exactly the same process. And yet, what keeps them locked into that cyclical, you know, thing? So in order to achieve economic and personal freedom through sustainable and enduring means, something's got to happen. We've got to develop the thinking and behaviours that's responsible for them. In other words, we've got to change our current financial map of the world. So everything is run according to a blueprint. Those blueprints are set down during your formative years, between the ages of 1 to 6. You'll start modelling from about, you know, 6 to 12, and they'll set in concrete. So we've got to start changing those things. If you can't do this, more than likely you'll actually be stuck with the same financial results that the flat world paradigm produces. And again, all you're going to do to figure out what's actually happening is look at somebody that's in the same situation as you, same job, maybe same area, same circumstances, but are 5 or 10 years older. Now, that's where you'll be. Now, if that's attractive for you, stay on that path. If it's not attractive for you, then we've got to start, you know, doing things. So in order to walk the red carpet, we've got to design our way out of the life that we're in. So design starts taking place first, doesn't it? It's just like buildings. We do not do a building on spec. Oh, here's a board, we'll knock that, and then I'll get something else and knock that, and here's a few bricks, I'll just lay them. I don't know anybody that actually builds like that. Unless maybe they're on a desert island and they just accept what washes up. So we design, everything's built on very solid foundations. We change the design over and over again until we're actually happy. Exactly the same way we've got to go. So we've got to define all the elements that you want in your vision. Now, that's your job. That's your job for this month. If you were going to write the script for your movie, what would you want in it? Who would you want to be your co-stars? Who would you want to associate with? Now, the more finite or the more minute you can actually make that, or the more detailed that you can make that, the stronger that will be. But what happens if you don't do that? Well, you just keep going along in the same current that you're being swept along in now. And again, there's nothing wrong with that unless you actually want to bail out of that and can't. Then we've got to get some support happening. So you must know why you want that freedom. Because if you don't know why you want the freedom, are you going to try really hard to gain it? No, because it won't make any sense to you. It's just kind of sort of a vague idea. Of all the people who say they want to be wealthy, very, very few people actually have a big enough why. You know, again, Mark Twain says, I can teach anybody to get anything they want. Trouble is, I've never been able to meet anybody that knows exactly what they want. Now, when you ask people, what do you want? People find it really difficult to say, with a great sense of clarity and a great sense of purpose. They're more likely to tell you what they don't want. I don't want to have to go to work. I don't want to have to do this. I don't want to have to do that. I don't want to, I don't want to, I don't want to. Well, if you focus on your don't want to's, guess what's going to turn up? Your don't want to's. So the images people hold are often confused, unclear, and they're kind of ever-changeable. You ask them next week, different idea. You know, you think about buying a car. It's this week, it's that next week. Saw a different one going there, I think I'll actually have that. However, your present model of the world is based on extremely clear subconscious images. So, which model of the world are you actually going to obey? That one or that one? Which model of the world is directing your life? Even at an unconscious level or a subconscious level. The extremely clear one or the often changeable one? Deep within our subconscious mind is a mechanism that serves our conditioned programming. When did we get the conditioning? When did we get to the conditioning? Between the ages of 1 to 6. In fact, between the ages of 1 to 6, a child does not have the brain waves that would measure or that would equate to consciousness. It actually has the brain waves that equate with unconsciousness. And so around about 6 or 7, those brain waves become more fully developed. So,
there's one thing that really lit up a light bulb for me, and that was the quote from one of the guys you mentioned. Imagination is more important than knowledge, and the penny dropped because for me, I've just been narrowing down on the how. I've been getting caught up on the how, and that just really summed it up for me. If imagination is more powerful than knowledge, then the how doesn't matter.
No, exactly. Most people get stuck on the how. How am I going to do this? How am I going to unpop the cork? Okay? I think in terms of if a how-to could actually do it for you, then all you would need to do is read a how-to book. Okay? Or go and do a how-to course. Alcohol? MSD? Just go back through history. I mean, you know, all the clues are there, aren't they? What about daydreaming? When's the last time you daydreamt? What about meditation? When's the last time you actually meditating? How many people or how many circumstances in your life give you the space to just be? Now, if you think about, for me, the most important thing is space. So, the people who are actually on the money mastery journey, you'll actually hear me talk about this a little bit more in depth. And that's one of the reasons why we go away to space. So, for instance, last weekend, for me, that was all about space. Space with each other, but physical space, environmental space, time space, where you don't have to be, you know, marching to the dream, beat of that drum. You know, when we go to Bali, the space is just that much more luxurious. So, if you think about, if you want to improve any of the major areas of your life, whatever it is, think about this. So, let's say that we could measure it. Let's say we could put it on a scale of 1 to 10, whatever it is. Let's say relationship. Okay, so let's say we assess our relationship as being a 3. 1 being I'm about ready to sign the divorce papers, 10 being my ideal, whatever your ideal is. Okay? Now, assuming that both parties want to move from a 3 towards a 10, how do you actually do it? Because the best... But how do you do it? Time and effort. But all of the time and effort that you're putting in is caused a 3. Knowledge? Exactly. You've got to have someone now. I don't know what a 10 is. You know, what is the ideal? But we don't necessarily have good role models in this area, do we? So, you know, assuming that we could describe what that is. Now, would it be fair? Would it be fair to say, is it easier? Let's say we're going to do some work on this. Would it be easier, just conceptually, would it be easier to do some work on that in your kitchen, or would it be easier on a luxurious desert island somewhere? Which would be easier? Okay, what's the difference? It's just the environmental space. The environmental space. So the environment is very, very important. It's very central to what you want to do. Is it easier to work on your relationships while you're, picking through the remains of the garbage drop? Or is it easier to do it when the candles are lit and the roses are there and the wine's flowing? Okay, what's different? It's the environment. So it's the space of the environment. So it's very, very important. Now, what other space do you actually need? Yeah, so you need time space. Okay, so you actually need the space of time to do whatever you decide that you want to do. You've got to put into action either some dialogue or some sharing or some communication or whatever. And you need the time space to do it. Now, here we are, we're being starved of time. So what other space is important? So you need some head space. Okay, so if you're worrying about all the stresses, if you're worrying about all the bills, if you're worrying about whether you've got a job or not, if you're worrying about whether you can sustain your current lifestyle, then there's not much head space necessary to put that sort of... What else do you need? Health? Health? You need some wellness space. Okay? So, if you're concerned about failing health, if you've got lots and lots of things and lots of considerations around that area, then chances are there's not much time or there's not much space, or there's not the environment around to do the other stuff. What else do you need? Well, what we need is knowledge, don't we? Or we could call it information. So we've got to know, we've got to, you know, we've got to think about some principles that are involved. So we've got to get access to different ways of thinking. So we've got access to a different understanding of, you know, what's happening for that person as opposed to what I think is happening for that person and Vicky Verka. What else? Well, I could call that headspace, but yeah, that would be okay. Huh? Well, certainly emotional space, wouldn't she? That's environmental. And that's emotional. That's the dot that tells you everything. So you need the emotional space, you know? If you're battered and bruised from society or from previous relationships, if you're based, you know, if you're still locked in memory as opposed to imagination. Now, what gives you that space? Sorry? Yeah. You actually have to buy the space, all the spaces. Because if you can't buy all the spaces, then the environment will be limiting. And it's not that it's not an impossible. It just gets less conducive. Without that, you can't necessarily buy the time space that you need. Does that make sense? And so, again, it's always about connecting economic freedom. Oops. What's that one? Is that with?
Yep.
Yeah. With personal. So, economic space with personal space. Is that... That's why space is so important. And without that, we can't... Now, again, you think about anything there, whether it's your opportunity to learn. If you don't have that space, if you're not demanding that space, if you're not buying that space, then it's actually... a bit difficult. So again, that's why three of the components on that money mastery are all about experiential. It's the experiential component of the stuff that we cannot get in theory in a classroom. We can only live, eat, sleep, and breathe it and share it with other people who have having like experiences. So imagination is so much more important. Not necessarily. Again, it depends on how you construct it. Because you could be taking one step but absolutely leveraging that, you know, a zillion percent. Because, you know, financial freedom is more about getting rid of your debts than it actually is about making money. So if you're progressing that way as well as that way, it's exponential. So whatever you want is currently outside your experience. You may have experienced it once, but you might have gone backwards, but whatever you want now is currently outside of what you experience. Would that be fair? So how do you get it if this is your comfort zone? And what you want is actually outside your comfort zone. Well, the only way that you can do it is to start operating from that edge. But by definition, that's scary, isn't it? So, the idea is to work with that. Now, if you think about fear, fear is an emotion that's always based in the future. I'm afraid of what may or may not happen. So it's future-based. It's the only emotion that's future-based. What is it we're really fearing? We're really fearing our lack of predictability. It might not turn out the way that I hope, therefore I won't do it. Okay, so what we're really losing is certainty, or our access to certainty. But how can we expand if we're not going to go and try something new? You can't. You can only contract. So what you do is that you learn everything that you need to learn about X, but you don't need to do anything yet. So, for instance, if I'm going to learn how to trade the stock market, I'm not going to go in and blindly start trading. I'm going to have a chat with a few colleagues, and I'm going to sit down there and, look, you get into my head what you've got in your head. Now, you know, if I'm working with somebody like Gary, Gary can pass on all of his information. He can pass on all of his wisdom. He can pass on all of his strategies. He can pass on all of his rules. He can pass on all of his procedures. What can't he pass on? His experience. Okay? Now, I can take all of what Gary can give me, but eventually I have to take a step out. Now, as soon as I take a step, what am I going to gain? I'm going to gain some feedback. Now, that feedback can tell me a whole bunch of different things, couldn't it? It could tell me wildly successful, wildly unsuccessful, somewhere in between. But that's all it is feedback. Now, what can I do when I get feedback? So, here I've taken action. So, we could call it application. So, here I have an idea. And I took some action. Now what? I've got feedback, okay? So from action I go to feedback. Okay? What do I do after feedback?
Reassess.
More action?
You adjust the
power. So I can make some corrections or some alterations or some adjustments if the feedback is telling me that I need to do that. Alternatively, the feedback might be saying, well done, do some more. Is that fair? So, whatever I get from the feedback, I then, you know, I can adjust, I can correct, I can go back, get more info, and eventually what have I got to do? Take another action. Okay? But is it the same action that I took up there? No, because I've actually got this and this, which equate to what? Experience. Okay? Now, I'm going to do what I get. I get feedback again. And what do? Same process. Oh, sorry, action. And from that action, I get feedback. Now, every time I do that, I expand my horizon. And the idea is to expand it sufficiently so that now I can actually encompass that. Now, I sit with that until that now becomes a norm. Then what? Whatever I want is always outside my experiences. Same process. That's what a mentor helps you achieve, but a mentor can't actually put you outside there. Only you can choose to finally let go of the rope and jump into dead sands, the rock. Is that okay? So, all of those things combined, eventually what's really going to happen is that rubber must hit the road at some point. And the worst way to do it is through how-tos. Because the feedback is far too costly. So unless you're actually working with somebody that you can ring up, that you can speak to, that you can go down, sit a have a chat to, blah, 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 blah. You know, there's only a very, very few percentage of the people that will actually crack the code that, you know, needs to be cracked. Which again is why 1%. achieve that freedom. But there's no reason why you can't be one in 200. Is that right? Is that the right way to say it? One in 200,000 a year. Okay, so let's move on. So, intellectually, most people understand the mechanics of wealth. That would be a true statement, wouldn't it? That's a fair statement. You know that you've got to buy a house, hold it over time. Is that true, though?
No.
No? Not these days? Why is it not true?
Well, you could buy a house, you could build a house last year, and it would be worth less today.
You betcha. You betcha. And if anybody is interested in the house that was on the market for 1.2, brand new, is now going for about half that. Forced sale. I think they call them mortgagee sales. Then there are, I think, four opportunities. So, there's an invite. But very few people ever become wealthy. And the reason for this is because how-tos don't actually drive behaviour. So again, who's gone to all of those how-to seminars and workshops and all of that? Now, see, it's actually not the how-to that doesn't work. It's the person that doesn't work the how-to. But most people go along to their how-to thinking that that's all they need to know. Well, see, but you can't get knowledge without execution. I'm sorry. So what's the difference between information and knowledge? See, when Gary talks about the share market, he's talking from a knowledgeable base. But when he gives the information to me, it's just information because he can't give me what his experience. So information, knowledge is information plus experience or application, and then when you combine them two, that's a tangible thing. You know, I can tell you how to make a red glaze on a ceramic pot. I can give you the recipe, but can you actually go? I can tell you how to do it, but can you actually go and do it? No. Why? Because it took me 15 years to figure it out. I can't give you the 15 years. So, if you think about what was I doing? What did I come over here? I was gonna do something. No.
We know how.
Oh, let's pop back over here. No, I just had a brilliant flash of... Anyway, if it comes back, it'll come back. Oh, I know what it was. Thank you. Thank you. So, here we have an underlying subconscious blueprint, okay? Well, we have several of them. And we got that during our formative years, and it's been reinforced and reinforced and reinforced, and then they actually produce our current results. What that is the foundation. That's the foundation stone of your life. Yeah, you could call it the keystone if you like. Now, what people do is that they proceed from there and they get a how-to. And they expect to be able to go out and do the how-to with the same old foundation that only produces that result. It can't do anything other than do that. So the people that really do understand and can apply the how-to, they're the 1% that would actually crack the code anyway. They just got quicker access to it. Aha! So they don't have the same foundation. You know, we could put 100 people in a wealth creation program, you know, 10 of them will go out straight immediately and start doing the strategies. You know, another percentage will start thinking about it. There are certain percentages that won't even go and open up the book again, won't even read the notes. So unless that's changing at the same time as that, that's the most effective combination. Yes, by all means, we have to understand those sorts of things, but the most important thing is that changes. And if anybody's doing that without doing that, you're guaranteed to almost only ever produce those results. It has to be a simultaneous thing. So were you going to ask a question then, Greg, or was that just a hint? To be honest, that's what the whole of the Western capitalist system does. It sells you what you actually want to hear. That's all it does. You know, it's just called good marketing, good PR, good everything. That's what keeps the world moving around. It's all of that sort of stuff. You've just got to be aware of what you want to hear and what you need to know. Are two completely different things. You know, when I actually stopped doing wealth educators in 2003, what people were saying in the advertisements, you know, you can come to my seminar and trade, you know, donkey do on the futures market and you know, 4,672 gazillion percent return whilst you're sort of wavering back and forth in your hammock somewhere. And you thought, gee, my ads look really boring. I want to go to that one. But of course, it's just, you know, it's hyperbole. But it's exactly what you want to hear. You know, say, oh, yeah, oh, yeah, I want to do that. And do that. So, you know, a long time ago, I made a decision to only ever tell people what they need to know as opposed to what they want to hear. So I know what they want to hear, but it doesn't serve them. In fact, it's just abandoning them and, you know, taking their money. So
I was thinking the similar thing, because all of those conservative people that won't actually take that junk you're talking about will actually go along to
yes.
something like that and put their life savings
yes.
in some
yes.
dead-pot scheme
yes.
and then claim that they were due.
Yes. Yes. They bought what they wanted to hear. What they wanted to hear is how quick, how much, how soon, and how certain. Tell them that, they'll follow you anywhere. But, yeah, again, just think this. Any given population, any given time, 1% financial freedom, 6% or 5% financial independence. It's your emotions and psychology that drive behaviour. So it's your emotions and psychology, your current emotions and psychology, that form the map of your territory. Now, the map is actually not the territory. It's your perception of the territory. Does that make sense? I mean, if I'm reading a map, the map is not the territory. It's an impression of the territory. No matter how detailed that map is, it's always an illusion. It can never be reality. It can only ever be a filtered version of reality. So what we've got to do is start tinkering around with air. A question I asked some people some time ago is, if you were a seed and I planted you, what would grow? Another version of you. Would that be fair? Is that what you want? Or would you like a slightly different version of you? Now, if you'd like a slightly different version of you, what must happen? Well, I would actually have to go, sorry? Oh, genetic engineering, I'd do a Monsanto trick. And we could call that the Monsanto. I wonder if they'd allow us to call it the Monsanto strategy. We could develop that, we could actually, yeah. That's a winner. I knew you were there for a reason. Yeah, so we'd need to do the Monsanto strategy. Now, has anyone heard of that one before? Regional, TM, yeah, R, C, we'd do all that sort of stuff. But what we've got to do is go in there and tinker basically with the genetic blueprint of the seed, because all the seed can do is follow its blueprint. That's all it can do. All we're going to do is plant it. You know, everybody else takes care of everything else. All we're going to do is plant it and nurture it a bit. So that's what we're going to do for you. Not that we're going to plant and bury you, but you got the metaphor. So it's your emotion psychology that drives behavior. Unless you get strength and clarity in these two areas, guess what? One year looks like the same as the last year. One five-year period looks like the same as the past five-year period, regardless of what you think, because what you think is going to always be working in your favor, isn't it? But at least that's the illusion. And how do we check to see the effectiveness of that thinking? Because it's not right or wrong thinking. It just is. But if we want to check the effectiveness of it, we must now look at the results that we're getting in the area that we want to actually have a look at. And if the results are not, you know, a bit down that end rather than that end, fine, we can now make different choices. So, you'll continue attracting what you've always been attracting to yourself. How can you not? Because you've got the driver that's responsible for it. So, what does your memory tell you about you when you actually look back in time? When you actually go back into the past and then you drag it up into your present. So how old are you? 10, 20, 30, 40, 50? Okay, so fine. Go back there. Think about it as a timeline. Look at it. What does it tell you about who you are? Are you a victim of circumstance? Are you a volunteer of conventional wisdom? Or conventional logic? You know, we use the term common sense, don't we? And I think somebody said the problem with common sense is that it's not common. Well, in fact, it is. I didn't agree with it first time I heard it. See, common sense is the sense of the commoners. It's the sense that we have all in common. Is that what you want? Because common sense produces common results. Would that be fair? So you want uncommon sense and you want uncommon results, don't you? Because it's uncommon sense and uncommon results that go to the extraordinary. It's common sense and common results that lead to underachievement, that lead to mediocrity. So think about that. Are you a victim of circumstance, a voluntary conventional wisdom? Or are you a victor because you have purposely written out your own life script? You have purposely drawn out that and you are literally walking the red carpet to the destiny that you have actually designed for yourself. It's a process. It happens over time. At some point along that process, what happens is we hit critical mass and it just goes, whoop. You know, has anybody ever tipped out of a boat? You know what I mean by critical mass? It's just that, just one half a degree, you're in. There's no time. It's like it just goes so quickly. It's like so slow. It's just so quick. And that's what actually happens. You hit that critical mass. So we all have the power to live according to our true, authentic self. Joseph Campbell talks about the hero's journey. We all have the power to undertake the heroic journey. And the heroic journey is won by design. Every culture, Joseph Campbell says, every culture in the world has what they call the hero myth. Every culture has a hero's myth. If every culture on earth has it, do you reckon it's important to understand it? Yeah, it's extremely important. And so he studied and he studied and he studied and he found that the similarity between all of the heroic myths can be plotted out into about 12 different stages. And since they understood the work of Joseph Campbell, you know, most of the blockbusters that come out of Hollywood now are all based on the hero's journey. You know, Lord of the Rings, Raiders of the Lost Ark, you know, all those sorts of, you know, Star Wars things. And when you actually understand the stages, and you can Google the hero's journey and you can Google, you know, the stages of the hero's journey, if you want to do that. However, most people have allowed society to rob them of their chance at living according to their true authentic self. Because, see, society doesn't want that for you. Society wants something of you. It's not here to serve you. It's designed, it's for you to serve them, or it, if you like. They've given others far too much importance and power to impact their own lives. Who can do more things for somebody else than they actually can for themselves? Why is that so, do you think? Who finds it easy to do stuff for other people? Who actually could slave away for other people? But when it comes to doing something for yourself, what happens? Guilt? Selfishness? Ooh, dirty word. Horrible word. So where does all that stuff come? Do you live according to the desires and expectations others have for you, or do you live according to the desires and expectations you have for yourself? If you can remember an eventful and emotional painful past, is it possible to imagine a future full of potential and living at the core of your true self? So if you can remember, can you imagine? Of course. They're not too different. Remember that memory is going back into the past and dragging it into the present, and imagination is going into the future and dragging it into the present. With imagination, you can go anywhere, do anything. With imagination, you can climb your own personal Mount Everest, whatever that may look like. And if you're working with people who have actually climbed their own Mount Everest, do you think the trip would be more efficient for you? But see, people don't work with people that have climbed their own financial Mount Everest or whatever that Mount Everest may be. They work down here with all the advisors that tell you, I think you should go that way. Well, how would they know? So they're working off theory, not experience. So you want to be working with somebody with experience that can put a better theory behind it. So how does the mind work? Well, we have a subconscious mind, and occasionally an idea might pop into that subconscious mind, and it creates a trigger. And from that trigger, a response or a reaction. Now, there's an internal voice that comes from the subconscious mind that says, look, yes, obey that because it's the habitual voice. Yes, obey this message. And if everything is hunky-dory, it'll actually go. If there's no interference between that conversation, then what you'll do is that you'll actually obey whatever that instruction is. You know, if it's a fear instruction, you'll obey that sort of thing. If there's no interference between the conversation, the message, and the internal voice, the brain will actually do what the message requests. So what happens if there's interference? Oops. What you call interference. On the other hand, if there's interference in that conversation, your brain will actually miss some of the instructions in that message. So where can interference come from? Well, interference can come from negative thoughts. It can come from doubt. So, idea, I want to be wealthy, no interference, I go there. But hang on, I'm not sure. If I do that, I might lose. I don't believe it really works anyway. Do you know that cynics and skeptics can always tell you what not to do, but they can never tell you what to do? You know, they can never tell you how to achieve anything. They can always tell you why you shouldn't go out there and you shouldn't do this and you shouldn't do that. And what do? You believe them. Why? Well, because it sounds so logical, doesn't it? Well, maybe we need to be working in the illogical. What happens if that little conversation or that little appearance is running from a low sense of self or a low self-esteem? What happens if it's running from that conditioned life that we're so process into? What happens if it comes from the foundation stone or the keystone, which is a conditioned blueprint? Well, if it comes from there, we've got interference running. Voices from different subpersonalities buried deep within your subconscious mind might begin saying, no way, Jose, absolutely no, not, under no circumstance. What do you think? You've got to think I'm crazy. And if they run that interference, guess what? Inaction. So you don't move forward. What happens? I just contract that little bit more. And that whole process goes over and over and over and over and over and over and over again. And so what are the results of that process? I don't know. For you, you've got to look at the results in all of the areas of life and see how they're actually panning out for you. So what you wish for and what you want and what you dream might actually happen in the conscious regions. What you receive are the mental images established through a lifetime of conditioning. You have a library of those images. There's literally thousands and thousands and thousands of millions of either they're visual or they're audible or they're experience based or they're just locked into that, and they actually form your reality because they're all your personal truths. And again, your mind will not deviate. You will not deviate from your personal truth. So your reality, your personal truths then become your expectations in life. What do you receive? You receive what you actually expect. If you don't expect, if you expect to lose, guess what? If you expect to fail, guess what? Methinks we've got a lot of work to do. You think so? But again, it's a process. It starts when you decide. Where does it end? I don't know. How much time have you got for the vote? How much interference is running? But if you never start, you never get. And so it's incremental. It's one step after the next. Do you know that when the space rocket launches to the moon, it's never actually on track? About 3% of the time. 97% of the time is off track. But see, you can never get to here. You can never go to your home unless you're actually off track 97% of the time. The only time you're actually on track is when you're driving up the driveway. Everything else is a rough approximation. The only thing that you've got to do is keep forward momentum. Because if you've got forward momentum, you can actually make all the corrections that you need to make. If there's no forward momentum, you can't make a correction. So all you've got to do is make a start. The rest is... Sorry? Sorry?
So when you consciously wish for a result to occur, from the idea stage to a result, and then subconsciously, you then wish for that very thing fully 100% expect to happen, or you follow the law of attraction. In fact, when you put that idea in, and then whatever shows up is exactly what...
And I guess it all depends. It depends upon what the idea is. Because I have lots of ideas that I'm only half-hearted about.
No, but
then the ones that are really important... Then it's a process of manifestation, isn't it? To make manifest. So, here we have... Here we have a sea... of unlimited potential. And we call that here. Okay? That's all of the potential that exists in the universe. So we might call that metaphysical reality. So a reality below that which I can see, or beyond that which I can see. So here is the world of pure potential. So we can get into quantum physics and all of that sort of jazz. Everything is energy. It's either a wave or a particle of pure potentiality. Here is physical reality. Okay? This is the physical manifestation of some of the potential that exists there. Every single thing in the man-made universe has gone from there to there. Every single thing. So how does it do it? There's got to be a process. There has to be a process of taking something from pure potential and actually having it manifest in physical reality. This whole complex was once pure potential, but now it's physical reality. How does that happen? Well, there are a number of steps. There are a number of stages. Now, if you ask people to consciously describe how that process happens, they might struggle. But they do know how to do it, because the physical universe the man-made universe is living proof of that there is a process. So when you study and when you actually apply that process, you can't not go from there to there. So, first step is to take pure potentiality and impregnate it with an idea. Step one. You've got to have the idea that you actually want to go and do that. Without that idea, nothing happens. It just stays there as pure potential. Step two. Intend, consciously intend to...